Rail transportation services to the city's airport today, trying to prevent disruptive pro-democracy demonstrations. Some activist leaders want their protests to continue, even though earlier this week, Hong Kong Chief Executive Carrie Lam announced the formal withdrawal of an extradition to China bill, a measure that initially sparked months of political turmoil in the streets of China's semi-autonomous territory. Violence broke out late Friday in Hong Kong after demonstrators laid siege to a police station and a subway stop. Hong Kong police used tear gas and rubber bullets against them. A prisoner exchange is taking place between Russia and Ukraine. It is made up of dozens of people, apparently including the 24 Ukrainian sailors apprehended when Russia seized their ship off the coast of Crimea last year. In Moscow for VOA, Charles Maines reports the deal was orchestrated by newly elected Ukrainian leader Volodymyr Zelensky and Russian President Vladimir Putin.
Early Saturday, buses were seen leaving Moscow's Lefortovo prison, and a Ukrainian state plane arrived at Vnukovo Airport in the Russian capital. While the exact number, list, and timing of the prisoner exchange is not yet known, the leaders of both countries have insisted a large-scale trade was imminent in recent days. In the coming days, we will jointly make an announcement, as we agreed with the authorities in Ukraine, said Russian President Vladimir Putin while addressing the prisoner exchange issue at an economic forum in the far eastern city of Vladivostok on Thursday.
That was Charles Maines in Moscow reporting for VOA. Ukrainian leader Zelensky called today's action the first step toward ending the war between his country and Russia, which supports Ukraine's rebels. U.S. health officials are again warning people to reconsider the use of e-cigarettes, as another person has died from a lung illness possibly tied to vaping. There have been about 450 possible cases across the United States. More news at voanews.com. From Washington, this is VOA News. The head of Iran's Atomic Energy Organization says Tehran has begun using its arrays of advanced centrifuges to enrich uranium beyond the limits of the 2015 Six-Nation Nuclear Agreement, a pact U.S. President Donald Trump abandoned last year. We get a report from AP correspondent Zaria Shackley.
The comments by Behrouz Kamalvandi signal a further cut into the 1 year. Experts estimate Tehran would need to have enough material for building a nuclear weapon if it chose to pursue one. Iran maintains its program is peaceful. Iran already has breached the stockpile and enrichment level limits set by the deal, while stressing it could quickly revert back to the terms of the accord if Europe finds a way for it to sell its crude oil abroad, despite crushing U.S. sanctions. The accord saw Iran limits its enrichment of uranium in exchange for sanctions relief. I'm Zaria Shakli.
The Indian Space Research Organization says it lost contact today with its Chandrayaan-2 spacecraft, minutes before a module was to make a critical touchdown on the surface of the moon. Millions in India stayed up all night to watch live images of the planned soft landing that was to place the capsule on the unexplored south pole of the moon around 2 a.m. local time. Chandrayaan-2 entered lunar orbit on August 20th after a six-week journey from Earth. Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi said despite the setback, he was proud of his country's space scientists. American tennis star Serena Williams could make history today at the U.S. Tennis Open. We get a report from AP's Julie Walker in New York.
Serena Williams has a chance to win her 24th major championship at the U.S. Open, which would tie her with Margaret Court for the most in tennis history. She faces 19-year-old Bianca Andreescu, who could become the first Canadian woman to win a Grand Slam title. Andreescu was born the year after Williams won her first U.S. Open in 1999. The 37-year-old has lost all three major finals she has reached since returning from giving birth, including to Naomi Osaka at last year's U.S. Open. Cheering her on this year from the stands will be her good friend Meghan Markle, the Duchess of Sussex. Julie Walker, New York.
The announcement of John Lansing's resignation as CEO of the U.S. Agency for Global Media is renewing questions about the mission and direction of the broadcasters it oversees. The agency directly manages five international news entities, including the Voice of America. Combined, its broadcast entities transmit in 61 languages and have an unduplicated weekly audience of 345 million. The 62-year-old Lansing was named CEO in 2015. President Trump wants him replaced with filmmaker John Pack, whose nomination has yet to clear the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, where it's been held up since last January. Gene Randall, VOA News.
evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
And the last time a Pope was coming to Madagascar was 20 years ago. It was Jean-Paul II. And this spiritual visit has a big meaning. But it has a second meaning, which is political, because Vatican is also a state.
Pope Francis continues his three-day state official visit to Madagascar Saturday.
All the political parties, we've got in excess of 45 political parties. They're all registered and regulated under an act of parliament, Cap 119 of the laws of Zambia. And so there are rules that are set out for a party to be registered and how they should comply with the regulations.
Zambian Home Affairs Minister denies the government is to blame for disbanding an opposition political party.
There is a need to reinstate the term limit, and there is a need to even not just let electoral commission to be independent electoral commission when it is not independent. So that should be worked out, and also the finances in elections.
And the leader of the Ugandan opposition parliamentarians says the group will continue in the effort to restore age and term limits in the constitution. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Pope Francis is scheduled to meet Madagascan President Andry Rajoelina in the capital Antananarivo Saturday. The pontiff arrived in Madagascar Friday for a three-day state official visit to the southern African country. His Madagascar visit is the second part of his African tour following his visit to Mozambique. Some Madagascans say the papal visit is noteworthy and has spiritual, political and economic impact on the country. Andry Rabananjara, owner and publisher of Anarcho Press Agency, tells me expectations are high since the last visit of a pontiff to the island country was about 20 years ago.
The visit of the Pope started yesterday and will be held for 3 days. In the 3 days, he will meet all the head of institutions, like head of state, all the head of communities. He will also make a visit to all the monuments and all the big points of the Catholic community, like the cathedral, and all the saints of the Malagasy Catholic community. He will also, one of the very big major points, he will also make a cult at Père Pedro. Pedro, who is one of the big figures of the humanitarian community in Madagascar, who just stands out because he just took a lot of poor people out of the poverty, building them and bringing them into a village out of the city. He will hold a very important cult in that place on tomorrow, Sunday.
How significant is the Pope's arrival and visit, three-day visit to Madagascar?
It has two steps. The first step is the spiritual meaning and depth of a visit of a spiritual Pope, because we have one of the biggest communities of Catholic inside East Africa. It's 4 million people that are Catholic. It's a quarter of the whole population. So in terms of spirituality, it's a very high event for us. It's a very particular event. And the last time a Pope was coming to Madagascar was 20 years ago. It was Jean-Paul II. And this spiritual visit has a big meaning. But it has a second meaning, which is political, because Vatican is also a state, and as head of state, it does have a political meaning, because Madagascar is coming back into recognition, and head of state of that meaning is very important. So as a head of state coming to visit Madagascar, it also has a very big meaning.
So talk to me about the economic impact of the Pope's visit, if I may ask you.
Well, economic meaning is we do not have trade relations and economic relations, but in terms of property, Vatican owns a very important asset in Madagascar. As a church, as a state, they do own particular particular important asset in Madagascar, very important asset, which is used in terms of humanitarian, which is also used in terms of action. And that is also a very important point. But they do only as the Lutheran and the Protestant also have.
What has been the reaction of Madagascar since the Pope's arrival?
There is a big fervor. I mean, you can see there is an interest in terms of people. They do manifest an interest as a spiritual. They do have a very big religious engagement in Madagascar. I mean, base of morals, it's a country that is very, very religious. It has been followed, and you can notice, and there's a statement, there is a lot of people. There are people in the roads. There are people attending the cult. There will be a lot of people for that event. We talk about, in terms of number, something like 800,000 people that will attend tomorrow, the big cult that the Pope will give. This is a very unique event in terms of interest. It can be considered as unique and very particular.
Andre Rabamananjara is the owner and publisher of Anakao Press Agency. He spoke with me from the Madagascan capital, Antananarivo. Zambian Home Affairs Minister has denied that the deregistration of the opposition party National Democratic Congress, or NDC, is politically motivated. Stephen Kamyungu says civil society organizations, NGOs, and all political parties have a responsibility to abide by the rules and guidelines governing them. His remarks came after the Registrar of Societies deregistered the National Democratic Congress by cancelling its certificate to operate as a political party. But opponents say the government is to blame for the disbandment of the opposition party. For reaction to the allegations, I reached Zambian Home Affairs Minister Stephen Kamyungu in the capital, Lusaka.
First and foremost, it's worth noting that all the political parties, we've got in excess of 45 political parties. They are all registered and regulated under an Act of Parliament, Cap 119 of the Laws of Zambia. And so there are rules that are set out for a party to be registered and how they should comply with the regulations. And so just under this year, we have had about 10 parties registered for various reasons. Others have opted to deregister themselves, like one of the party which was led by the former vice president, Brigadier General Myanda, who just opted to voluntarily get the party registered. We have about 10 more parties who have been notified and went to Parliament to announce so that these people could meet their obligation on behalf of the Registrar of Society.
What about the issue of the NDC? Because some people are saying their deregistration is politically motivated because they are giving the government a run for its money. What is your take on this?
Not at all. First of all, yes, indeed, the leaders of this political party, comrades that came out of the Patriot Front, and we got them registered. They were allowed to be registered by the Registrar of Societies in the first place. The party had a secretary general in the name of Mr. Mwenya Musenge, who got the party registered. And as far as the Registrar of Societies knew, the leader who was appearing on the list as the executive person for the party was Mr. Mwenya Musenge, who was also a former member of the PF. Now, they brought in Honorable Chimba Kambwiri, who was an MP, as their consultant. Now, their structure, as they put it to the Registrar of Societies, first of all, doesn't provide for such kind of position. And as time went on, they themselves differed, because this consultant who was hired wanted to take over the party as a president without following their own constitution, which they had put on how office bearers must be elected. And so that dispute ranged for some time, and they decided to take each other to court. And the court passed judgment. They nullified the existence of the constitution, which the party had tendered to the register of societies, which constitution must be laid, must be read together.
Do they have a recourse based on the deregistration to appeal the deregistration, if I may ask you?
No. the recourse they may have is probably to appeal to the minister's office, but even the minister now has got limitations on what discretion he can use to have that party reinstated.
So is this a warning to all political parties and other civil society or non-governmental groups to abide strictly by the lay down?
It's not a warning. If the NDC is not the first party to be registered this year. This year alone, we have had 10 parties registered for various reasons. Non-compliance of statutory requirements. Others have just gone into oblivion. And we can't keep them on, the societies can't keep them on record. And I was just telling you that 10 others have been notified because they equally haven't been fulfilling their obligations, which include filing in of annual returns every year. Okay? So it's not a warning. Political parties know their obligations. And those that fail to comply with the regressions, obviously, certainly find themselves with issues to explain to the resource society. So it's as simple as that.
Stephen Kabiongo is the Zambian Home Affairs Minister. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. A Nigerian opposition coalition is hailing the ongoing fight against corruption being carried out by the Economic and Financial Crimes Commission, or EFCC. The Coalition of United Political Parties, or CUPP, says there's also need for the anti-graft agency to expand its investigations and prosecute all former governors who have been complicit in acts of corruption across the country. The party's remarks came after the EFCC obtained a court order for the temporary forfeiture of assets traced to Senator Roches Okoracha and his family. Ikenga Imo Uguchinyere, the spokesman for the opposition coalition, tells me that the anti-graft organization should also investigate accusations that former governors have been involved in acts of corruption.
There have been huge cry and shock in Imo, first of all, going with the level of financial impunity and recklessness by the former governor, Roches Okoracha, who looted everything in Imo, including carpet and all, leaving a debt burden that is over 100 billion and with no tangible project except Chinese loans that have expired even before he left office. So there is even no way any reasonable human being will want to sit back and watch without seeing a quarter, you know, go to where he belongs to, which is being investigated for certificate and jail. And with EFCC decision to free the assets of the wife and the daughter and the girl. How can the wife explain 96 flat? If you say you have the resources to do 96 flat, you show the business that you did and where the income came from. You saw the one the daughter did. You know, somebody that doesn't even have 10,000 naira in her account suddenly becoming a multi-billionaire.
Ikenga, yes. Some of these accusations leveled against former Governor Yari of Zamfara, Adams Oshomole of Edo, Ajimobi of Oyo, Shetima of Bono, they are all said the charges or allegations were politically motivated. How do you react to that?
Everything in this life is politically motivated. But the question is, you look at the substance. What is it politically motivated? That does not take away the fact that if you rape somebody, if you commit a crime, if you use your state resources, and I report to the EFCC because I'm your political opponent, there's no problem with that. It does not matter. The most important is that the man commit the offense. Will it because of political interference? Will it because I'm motivated by political reasons to report him? And if he has committed a crime, you now say he can go on and enjoy his youth. The point remains that once you commit an offense, there is consequences for that. And that's why we are saying whether it is politically motivated or non-politically motivated, because for us in the opposition, we are accusing them of political persecution. And they are trying our people. So if they are trying our people, which is political persecution, nobody sees anything wrong with that, why not try members of the ruling party or former officers of the ruling party?
But some people are saying all those people you've mentioned as corrupt, that the EFCC supposedly should go after, our political opponents just because you seem not to like their politics, and because they are political opponents, you are asking the EFCC to go after them. Why, when there are other people, they said, in your party who have been accused of corruption as well?
As they are aware, some key members of the opposition are taking prior, but mainly the one of the great alliance members, the PDP, that we keep there. There's over 15 of them. There's over 5 or 7 who are facing corruption trials. All facing one investigation or the other. Even people who their only offense is that they finance opposition candidates are also facing corruption. Their businesses have been crumbled and shut down. It does not matter. We are going to accept that fact. Let the president, now that he has done the same thing for our people, have the balls to look inward, because these people are taking public resources. And not to turn on the MMPC, you are aware of the $25 billion contract that was awarded with our 2%. The president throws it under the carpet. And we don't even know who is in charge. If you don't need to hand over the running of government to the chief of staff, we elected this man as the president of the republic. Well, I'm not saying this because I am the spokesperson of the opposition. I am saying this because the country is at the stage of total collapse. Corruption has come back, insecurity has come back, terrorists and bandits have taken over all parts of the country. And the president is putting people on his feet and relaxing. Without knowing the urgency that is needed to tackle this problem. If he cannot use this job like we are saying, let the president get back from office, let him resign. Who does he think he is that he cannot talk to the people that get his mandate? Is there a military dictator?
You were just a moment ago praising the work of the EFCC. And the EFCC is working under President Muhammadu Buhari, who Nigerians have confidence in his ability to fight against corruption, which you said the EFCC is doing. Under President Muhammadu Buhari, isn't this...
No, we didn't commend the work of the EFCC. What we commended, them for their courage to go after corruption. And that is why we said they need, because the EFCC has become a political tool. But that is not the way they want. We are commending them for going after corruption. Whose fundamental act of corruption is international, is global. Now that they have gone after corruption, we want the chairman of the commission to look beyond the corruption and look at other cases of corruption that, you know, like a monthly deal before him, and look into it. Let him show he has the force to do the work. Let it not be that he's a BS to the president. He only goes after the people who are not friends with the president, because you are hearing us about the corruption may have fallen after the president. But that doesn't take away the fact that we are commending him for going after corruption, whether it is politically motivated or not.
Ikenga Imo Ugochinyere is the spokesman for the Nigerian Opposition Coalition, CUPP. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. Ugandan opposition parliamentarians say they will not be deterred in their effort to ensure term and age limits are restored to the East African country's constitution. The lawmakers say they also seek changes in the electoral process, including having a truly independent electoral commission tasked with organizing credible elections. Their remarks came after the opposition legislators proposed a constitutional amendment bill to reintroduce term limits. Nevertheless, Betty Aol Chang, leader of the opposition in parliament, tells me, despite the challenges, her members will not relent in the effort to restore constitutional age and term limits.
The constitutional amendment for us to have a peaceful transition in Uganda, there is no way we can close our eyes to term limits. So there is a need to reinstate the term limits, and there is a need to even not just let electoral commission to be independent electoral commission when it is not independent. So that should be worked out. And also the finances in election. You know, it is so bad sometimes giving gifts during when election is just there. You find that the president is able to give a lot of gifts. And those gifts can amount to what? To buying elections. So there are very many other things that have to be improved on. So we propose constitutional amendments.
As a leader of the opposition in parliament, do you have sympathizers or allies from the NRM that has been dominating parliament in order to ensure this is successful. Do you have any allies in the NRM that backs this constitutional amendment you seek?
Yeah, there are many, though may not exceed the number that usually go with what the president decides. Because when the president decides, he also goes with some payments. Even in the passing of or the removal of this age limit, a good number of NRM did not agree to it. And that was why our number went up to over 100 who said no to removal of age limits. So we rely a lot on them. We still have to lobby them. We have to mobilize them. But the number may not be too big. I want to just say that if it were only possible that money would not be used in politics, then people make their own decisions, their free will, on their own free will. I don't think so that we would fail to get the required number. But you know, in our country here, money has always been used. Even in passing the amendment of the age limit, a lot of money was used to buy people who would say yes to amending the constitution.
Some people are saying this is just a publicity stunt because there is no way this can be reintroduced into the constitution after it was removed. As long as President Museveni remains the country's leader, it will be a utopian idea for the opposition to think that this can be reintroduced. How do you react to that?
Yes, I want to say, even if it is one person only who goes to say the right thing, we still have to insist on the right thing. We cannot just say, because President Museveni is there, so we should just forget about saying the right thing, which is good for the people of Uganda. Yes, it is difficult. The challenges are there. But, you know, politics is also a game of numbers, and the number is just very small. But still, the population out there who side with us is actually bigger than the population that goes with the population with, that goes with the majority members of parliament.
Now, so I understand that, but the question is, there will be money used to ensure that the status quo remains and that there will be no constitutional term limit and age limit as long as President Museveni is there. Despite the fact that you said you have the majority of the population on your side, term limits and age limits were removed from the constitution. So how plausible do you think this move is going to be? What are the successes or the chances of success, if I may ask you?
One thing is that we in trying to consult, because we are still even asking just Parliament to give our Shadow Attorney General leave for Parliament to go and consult. And I believe that that should be possible to give leave. Then consultation with the people. People will give their views. Whether they turn the views of people down or not, can also make people justify whether we are under a democratic government or we are under a dictatorship. So if we are under dictatorship, things or issues of the people will never be accepted.
Betty Aol-Chan is the leader of the Ugandan opposition in parliament. She spoke with me from the capital, Kampala. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, the Ghanaian National Association of Graduate Teachers, or NAGRAD, has embarked on a strike ahead of the upcoming resumption of school after vacation. The teachers group says, despite repeated appeals, the Public Services Commission has refused to review a newly introduced human resource management information systems, which the group says is negatively affecting its members. Eric Angel Kabonu, the leader of the teachers group NAGRA, tells me that Public Service Commission has refused to fix the bug in the new system, adding that members of the group will not return to work until all their concerns are fully addressed.
Well, the reason is that our promotion are having serious problems. The problems are, one, that teachers who are due for promotion are not being invited for promotion on time. Two, those who've gone for promotion interviews and have been successful are not placed on their new and right skill to enjoy their new salary level. Three, teachers with responsibilities in high schools, for example, foremaster, housemasters, heads of departments, who have gone for promotion, have had that allowance part of their salaries taken off because of the problems associated with the human resource management information system introduced by the Public Services Commission. Four, teachers who go on study leave, with or without pay, on their return are not able to be absorbed into the Ghana Education Service because, again, of the human resource management system.
Now, have you engaged the entity, the Public Services Commission?
Well, the Public Services Commission is taking a very intransigent position, and they've refused to budge and renege on their position, indicating that they believe in the system that they've introduced, and they are determined to follow it through.
So whatever happens to the students who will be left unattended to, or their education will be hampered based on your action and that of the Public Service Commission?
Well, what happens to the students is that they will go to school and their teachers will not be there.
So what's the next line of action now, if I may ask you, from NAGRAD?
Well, we expect that authorities will be minded by the consequences of the industrial action and also quickly address the issues for the teachers to go back to school.
What do you say to critics who say that NAGRAD is not negotiating, for that matter, in good faith instead of engaging in the Services Commission as well as the government to address some of your needs? How do you respond to that?
Well, we have raised these issues severally, and it looks as if we are not being heeded to, and we've gotten to the cul-de-sac, and we don't have any other option than to advise ourselves by way of industrial action.
Now, have you engaged, by the way, the government, and what has been the government response to that?
Well, we have not had any response as of yet, but we hope and pray that in the coming days we'll be getting favorable responses that can ameliorate the action.
Now, so how do you resolve this stalemate?
We have always believed in the principles of engagement, so long as those principles will address our issues.
So without the Public Services Commission addressing your issues, NAGRAD will perpetually stay on strike until they meet your demands, correct?
Absolutely incorrect.
So what is the message to the people or your students, as well as the Public Service Commission?
Well, I am not supposed to give any message to the students. I am responsible for the teachers, and my message to the teachers are that they should be resolute because this is a just cause.
Eric Angel Kabonu is the leader of the Ghanaian National Association of Graduate Teachers, or NAGRA. He spoke with me from the capital, Accra. Meanwhile, Crown Women Rising, a training, networking, and empowerment organization, just concluded its annual Women's Empowerment and Business-to-Business Conference in the Ghanaian capital, Accra, Friday. The two-day summit was under the theme, Women Entrepreneurs Empowered for Africa's Prosperity Engage, Connect, and Grow. The summit served as a platform for displaying Ghanaian women-owned businesses and connecting them with investors, prospective marketing and distribution partners from across the continent, China, the United States, and Europe. To learn more about the summit, Emily Soro, co-founder of Crown Women Rising, joins us live via telephone link-up from the Ghanaian capital, Accra. Hello, Emily.
Hi, Shika.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited. I'm in Accra, Ghana.
Wonderful. Now, so tell me, how did the two-day summit go?
The two-summit day was really successful. We had a very good turnout. We had participants for the forum. We had entrepreneurs coming from all over Accra. We had speakers. We had government agencies represented. We had banks, private sector, and really good participation from the women.
Now, so talk to me about the government participation. Were there any promises made? Were there any prospect for those participants and business-owned entities, particularly with regards to women?
Well, we had a representative from the Minister of Industrial and Business, and they reiterated all the free trade areas, all the work that the government is doing to allow the Ghanaian women entrepreneurs to interact with other African countries. And also we talked to them about AGOA and how they can take advantage of the free tax exports to the United States. So far, there were no promises, but at least the resources were made available to the women.
Talk to me about the resource made available to women. Is there an infrastructure? Is there a policy implementation that will facilitate this work done by your organization?
Well, the facilitation is this training that we are conducting here about AGOA and really teaching the entrepreneurs how to export duty-free. However, on the continent of Africa, we are talking about the intra-trade and all the all these things that the governments are signing the free trade areas to allow Africans on the continent to trade with each other duty-free.
So what has been the reaction of the participants so far with regards to the training and the interaction and the connection and the showcase of their businesses, the platform you provided for them?
I think a lot of the women came out really excited. We had real-life cases where a woman was talking about her real-life experience doing business with the banks, with the lawyers, and she said that she's coming out of the conference with more knowledge and she'll be able to do her business better. So the reaction is that the participants were able to walk away with more information on doing business in Ghana, intertrade, and also export. They came out more knowledgeable, although Crown Women is going to continue doing more training going forward.
Were the objectives or aims of this particular two-day conference realized?
I would say they were. They were realized. The training was great. The forums were great. The participation. We had some of the top exporters from this country sharing their best practices, sharing their challenges, and really telling the aspiring entrepreneurs what the journey is like to be successful.
What about the issue of expanding the businesses across the sub-region and perhaps the continent and beyond?
Yeah, that came up. As you know, Crown Women right now is focusing more on Africa, and we have an upcoming event in Nairobi, Kenya, November 1st and 2nd, where we are hoping that the women on the east, on the West Africa will come to the east and kind of see what it looks like to do business with women on the east of Africa.
So what was the overarching message regarding this two-day summit before we go?
The message was that African women can and will be able to trade with each other in Ghana. They can trade with their neighbors in West Africa. They can trade with other women across Africa, and they'll be able to cross the seas and trade globally, not only in the American market, but also in other global markets.
Thank you very much. That was Emily Soroko, the founder of Crown Women Rising. She spoke with me from the Guinean capital, Accra. And right now it's time for music from our African collection. You're hearing Linda from Rema Namukala. Science comes next with King Shaha. And then Isambe with Kanda Bongoman. We end it with Ujowe with David Lutalo.
Banga gamba tife na yenga kukozechi Nesi motu gantuge Neta wanenka bacho kotu se Atera obinda Nawe linda, linda bambi dale Togenda, selava numa Kulichisera Choka, otu se, atera ogenda Nawe linda, linda mambi, dale Togenda, selava numa Kulichisera, bankulize, oba, vize Choka, otu se, atera ogenda
Wagala nyecho na uchimani Naluli na kuoru koye Neloto ndavye echinoye kwewe Nota Nelwe sise tumumu baka Sista wange ya kukume Echino olemeo kutia Muju Kube chizibu nino kufuba No nyansimi tuwezine enemera Chukako Kale to nyinga Tokaba Ninda wikienja Sente zizo Genze kumirimu
Oh, nawe Nawe linda, linda bambi Dale Togenda
Togenda
Selava numa Kulichisera Bakulize Oba
Sorry.
Madden kulo waza konze kanzi jani sinde kulabe koka tono ngende njie. Oh baby I got to go.
Oluti kolu lolo mese nempe woyanko mose toneka kuba wanonsiao. Abankwana bajeyo na yenze na beresa Mbagamba chimu zena londa na mala
Nange wento kwa kalanganzo ni mujawa
Nentalu na kuwedu lile lolupe Ponezo kusana wo
Nenda, nenda wambi
Kangenda mbeka na we
Togenda
Emiri muwantu jemingi
Kulichisera, bankulize Oba, vize Choka, otuse, atera ogenda Nawe, nawe linda, linda bambi
Kangenda mbeka nawe
Togenda,
vamuchejo
Zerava numa
Emiri muwantu jemingi
Kulichisera, bankulize Oba,
bize choka otuse atera ogenda
kinza kupiro kwini nwati kupiro lo mane moya ngareke sababu teke kupiro jayo saya suo baby saya singe njagalo kinze saya singe
njagalo nyanchule chibala
Kitty said. sasa unafikiria mimi ni masikini Kumukwano kwa musiku wa kuichiza ukolomoni
Siri na muna la bendo osa Ujue na kuwaza usiku na mchana Kono mala benzita Ani nakupenda sana Oh, nje ya katunda koleyo Chakaranka nye kongoli wano Sabo yitenga nze pao Kalichimwa mkusa ujeno Chana kukamba kusengao Lafu ye ya njalo lingango Mazima nusu zanga mko Oh, 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 oh. Ujue Nakuwaza usiku na mchana Sita kutengao Tupenda ni wengine nilisha sao Kweli hani nasikia ndani Uhuli ni choma Haya simatani warasusa Nina shindo atakulala Tangu leo Naomba ni wa mtu mpenda Uma baby we Mkini kosa nina shikwa oma Nje ya katunda koleo Ya kalanka nye kongoli wano Sabo yitenga nzepao Kusingao, lafu ye ya njaro lingango Mazima nusu zanga mbeo
That was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America and from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sally, producer Douglas Impulga, and our engineer for today, John Dryden. We say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, the antics of a market buffoon provide laughter, but nobody prays that his child becomes the market buffoon. I'm your host, Peter Clotte in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
This is VOA News. I'm Gene Randall. There has been